Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I am joined, as always, by one Jacob Negro. Jacob, how goes?
Good. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing all right. Apparently, there's an RCQ at my locals this weekend.
Ooh, standard. Nice. Standard?
Yeah. I didn't expect it to come up so soon. I'm kind of scrapping for cards, but I think I might play in it.
Nice. Thinking of playing.
I think Esper Control.
Gotcha.
Which is a deck we're gonna look at later. I just have been doing well with it. I could consider playing. I think because I've gathered those cards, I've also gathered the cards for blue-white control.
Right.
So something along those lines probably. That isn't necessarily thinking that I think that's just the best deck, but if it's a tournament, you know, I want to play in, I might as well have some fun, play a deck I like.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Did you get up to anything interesting this weekend, or?
No, not really. Just been playing a lot of Magic and TFT, Teamfight Tactics.
Oh, nice. What genre game is that? I've heard of it, but I really don't know anything about it.
I guess an auto battler is the genre. It's kind of like drafting a team of units that fight another team of units, but you don't actually control the fights. It's more just like you draft and position your units, and they fight against other teams.
Okay.
And you all kind of work with a shared pool, stuff like that, and they have different synergies, so it's kind of like drafting different archetypes and deciding what archetype is open and how to move into it, and you can be kind of forceful and stuff like that.
Nice. Sounds fun.
Very similar skill set to drafting, but not actually playing your games of draft, just drafting. But also the game's really, I guess, it's, you kind of just have to play, like, build your teams and see how they play out, or, you know, there's guides, of course. But what I would say is that, like, reading what the units do just doesn't really give you any useful information at all. It's like drafting Magic without reading the cards and figuring out from the cards playing themselves which cards are good or bad.
Right, which people do all the time.
Yeah.
And get bad data. Yeah, it's funny. I've heard of card games that people have made that are sort of like that, where you draft and then it auto battles. I can't remember the name.
Bizarre. I think.
So it's definitely, I mean, drafting is a lot of the fun part of it, but I like playing the games too. So, I mean, that's why I like Magic, I guess.
Yeah, of course. The Magic analogies are tough because, you know, the game is about the draft phase, and you have these shops and you reroll the shops and it makes it really interesting for you. But
yeah, totally. So for today's episode, we're going to be talking about Standard in part because, you know, there's Standard RCQs going on. And we figured that we would, since it's a brand new format, we're going to do a Standard overview, similar to the overview episode we did for Modern. So we're going to be going through all the deck lists on MTG Goldfish, sort of the winner's metagame share of decks there from the top to the bottom. And we're just going to talk about all the different decks that people have been playing. Unlike Modern, this format's a lot less established, so we're probably going to be talking about things like which cards we think are bad or what kind of deck changes that people could make to decks to make them better and that sort of thing. And of course, we're not holding anyone to account for the deck that shows up on MTG Goldfish. Of course, people are going to be trying new cards.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. Before we get started, I want to remind you that you could find us over on patreon.com/stockuppodcast. We have one tier at the moment. It's $1 a month. With that, you get access to our Discord as well as all of our exclusive posts. You get to see the decks we brew and the decks we're going to be taking to tournaments and that sort of thing. And of course, if you don't want to support us over on Patreon, that's totally fine. You can watch us on YouTube, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. So without further ado, I'm looking at MTG Goldfish for those of you who want to follow along at home. And the first deck is Dimir Midrange. Straight out of the last format, what's this deck's general strategy and how has it changed since rotation?
Yeah, so this is a Dimir Midrange deck that plays usually cheap evasive creatures, ones with flying. Sometimes you'll see, usually always Spyglass Siren. I guess now that Fairy Mastermind is rotated, Deep Cavern Bat might be more reasonable. Flood Pits Drowner is not evasive, but the fact that it taps and stuns something means it typically can remain unblocked. And the reason they have all these evasive creatures is kind of the payoff is Kaido, Bane of Nightmares, and Enduring Curiosity. So you really just need to get in, unblock creatures, and these payoffs will allow you to draw a lot of cards, or Kaido is really flexible and hard to deal with permanent in general. And then it just has removal and some counter spells, and that's pretty much the deck. It has a lot of creature lands, usually a mix of Soulstone, Sanctuary, and Restless Reef. You usually see four or five copies, so usually a lot of its end game involves activating one of those. Notably, Soulstone Sanctuary is a ninja, so as you get Kaido emblems or just one throughout the game, that can grow it. And this deck, you know, really only lost like Fairy Mastermind, and it lost two lands. It got lost Underground River and Darkslick Shores, and in exchange, it has Watery Grave plus Starting Town, which is probably about equal to what it had before. Starting Town is a fast land and a pain land in one, and then Watery Grave is just much better than either of the lands that rotated.
Right. Do you think Starting Town is what they should play over something like, I guess the other option would be Fabled Passage?
Yeah, I think these decks with one drops are going to want to play
Starting Town.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially since when you have two colors of one drops. I mean, this deck only has one Sissel, but yeah. I've seen decks with more. In terms of cards that are different in from rotation, it looks like all the creatures are pretty much the same and the removal has changed. Obviously, before people were pretty set on playing something close to four cut down, four go for the throat, and now there's a lot of variation.
Yeah.
Is there anything, like, does your intuition tell you what kind of cards people should be playing in these slots? Is there anything you've liked more or less?
Yeah, I haven't played this. I played this like a good amount before rotation and not after. Tragic Trajectory is a sorcery and sometimes misses, but you know, sometimes it just works, like kills Hired Claw or, you know, Deep Cavern Bat without the void, and it's not that hard to void things in normal decks. This deck in particular with map tokens, that's going to go a long way when you Kaido bounce something, trading in combat. I guess Flood Pits Drowner, like if you untap and activate it on the thing you stunned, you could trajectory another creature. Shoot the Sheriff is just going to be, you know, the kind of default, I imagine, unless people really start playing Outlaws to kind of level it. I would say, as someone that has considered Shoot the Sheriff while Go for the Throat is legal, ones that come to mind is Hired Claw, Spyglass Siren, and Soulstone Sanctuary, which might be the most important of those. Those are things that it's not going to hit.
Yeah. I will say, just through playing, you know, when you play a large amount of games and you play against cards that aren't the Tier 1 strategies, there are a good amount of these outlaws, as compared to artifact creatures. So Shoot the Sheriff's quite a bit worse than Go for the Throat. You're going to run into things that you're not really expecting and you won't be able to kill. So that's definitely a downside.
Yeah, I guess now that Steel Cutter has been banned too, there's a lot more Slickshot Showoffs, and that's a card you really need to be able to kill. And that's an outlaw.
Especially if your other removal spells are all sorcery. Tragic Trajectories.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so how do you think this deck's positioned? It's by far the most popular deck, it looks like, still. Just because it's obvious what you should do to play it after rotation?
I think
or?
It's obvious what you should do, and I also think this deck's very punishing of clunky, slower decks. And even in general, I think, you know, even as the meta develops, big mana and control decks, I think, are typically amazing matchups for this deck. You know, you really have to be able to keep up in the early game with this deck to not just let them slam a Kaido or Curiosity and have this card draw engine, and then from there, even though they have very few counter spells, it's a little more than it looks, because typically against those decks, Tashana's Tidebinder can be pretty effective too. Combined with the fact that these card draw engines are attacking you for 3 or 4 or 5 damage, stuff like that, they're just pretty resilient threats that also draw extra cards, and you kind of need to have some early game access. Historically, this deck has struggled against aggressive decks, which, you know, a lot of the bannings were pointed at aggressive decks too. So,
yeah, I know in your blue black list from the last format, you played some number of Gix as additional kind of snowball creatures.
I played one Gix. I see some of the lists I'm seeing now just have all four Kaido's main deck. That wasn't usually stock before. Kaido is certainly like your best card in some matchups and one of your worst cards when you're against an aggro deck, especially on the draw, whereas Gix is like a card that maybe you play it, draw a card off a Siren, and you could just block and trade off with it, and you know that's like a happy exchange, but it could still run away with the game in the matchups where Kaido could shine potentially. So that's why I had that. But Gix is rotated, so.
Right. So the reason I bring it up is there's a new card from Edge of Eternities called Elegy Acolyte. 2BB 4/4 lifelink. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, you draw a card and you lose a life. And then it has Void at the beginning of your end step. If a non-land permanent left or warped, you create a 2/2 robot. Do you think that card could have a place in this deck?
I think that card's really powerful. I think this deck probably has enough, especially because sometimes Kaido, you know, you don't always ninjutsu Kaido. It's not really a 3-drop. All the time. There's a lot of board states, you know, especially if you're playing with the card Deep Cavern Bat, where you're just going to attack them with your bat and play Kaido on turn 4 and get your card. So I think that would be a little clunky. I would keep an eye out for that card and perhaps other Deep Cavern Bat decks that aren't blue-black.
Okay, makes sense. But really this deck basically already has more than 4/4 drops, so...
Yeah. That card also plays surprisingly well with non-evasive creatures. I say this all from playing draft, but it's really strong in draft. I immediately recognized that I had it in one of my decks. Just if you have a 2/2 and your opponent has a 2/2 and you play that card in attack, you're either drawing a card and losing a life or getting another trading and getting a new 2/2 at your own step, for example.
Yeah. It doesn't have the same thing as Gix where you draw or Curiosity Cat where you draw as many cards as you hit them with. You only draw a maximum of one per turn.
Yeah.
But obviously it has, you know, it's a 4/4 lifelink and it has the other attacks. So.
Yeah, and it's also like, in my example with one creature, it makes it sound like you're getting either or, but there's plenty of board states where you get both lines of text the turn you play it.
So we'll move on to the next deck here. Before we do, what's your bird's name, Jacob?
My bird's name is Riddle.
Riddle. That's a pretty good name for a bird. So yeah. if you guys hear an occasional screech in the background, you can blame Riddle.
Oh, that was my dog Mouse that you heard more recently, but yeah.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Mouse sounds like more of a bird than Riddle then.
That's
fair. So next we have another deck from really good last format. Is it Cauldron? Yeah. What's this deck's strategy? What has changed after rotation?
Yeah, so this deck, as per the name, is playing Agatha's Soul Cauldron, the full 4 copies, even though it's legendary. And it also plays Prof's Eidetic Memory, and I'd say these are kind of the payoffs to the deck because you're playing with a lot of draw discard type things, Fear of Missing Out, Tursa Light Shatter, Steam Core Scholar, and Winter Night Stories. And the real goal here is to get VV into your graveyard and exile it to your cauldron. And then any of your creatures with +1/+1 counters on them can once per turn make mana equal to their power, which is a ton of mana. You know, VV starts at 0 power, but for example, you can play a Fear of Missing Out. On turn 2, discard a VV. On turn 3, you can play a Cauldron, exile a VV. That fear can make 3 mana. From there, you know, if you had a Marauding Mako in play, that would have been getting a counter from the Fear of Missing Out, so that could make mana too. It's kind of a blue-red aggro deck. Pretty fast out of the gates. You know, draws, like playing Prof's Eidetic Memory on turn 2 and Tursa Light Shatter on turn 3, you have a 5/5 haste. It's just a really strong, kind of aggressive deck, I'd say, that can definitely play a long game, particularly because of Winter Night Stories, but also because, you know, has a lot of built-in flood protection. What it lost is it lost Shivan Reef, so we're seeing a mix of starting town and basic lands for the most part replacing that, and maybe more importantly it lost Wilderan Thrillseeker, which was a secondary kind of cauldron target, and if anything it was more of a finisher, but it was really unique, and I know I've talked about this before in that you could have a really powerful turn with this deck all in your post-combat main phase. Particularly important that it's post-combat because Prof's Eidetic Memory is going to potentially offer a lot of +1/+1 counters to a creature in combat. And you could dig through a lot of your deck and maybe just even play a second Cauldron, exile your Thrillseeker, and shoot your opponent for the rest of their life total. They're trying to kind of replace that card with Draconautics Engineer, which obviously is not as good because they could have played Draconautics Engineer before Thrillseeker. But it's still a creature with pretty powerful activated abilities. It can offer some ability to give haste, which won't work for post-combat kills, but maybe opens up some pre-combat setups that still allow you to lethal your opponent if they tap out. Because this deck, even without Thrillseeker, is very good at punishing your opponent for tapping out, especially as the game goes long. Those control matchups are mono-white. If your opponent taps out for a big sweeper, especially if you just had a Cauldron already in play and that's staying in play, you can untap and win pretty easily.
Yeah, another thing I've noticed that's different about this format is the addition of seam rip and, I guess, a null. That's sort of a lesser, but certainly seam rip gives more decks more efficient answers to Cauldron.
I agree. I think null, you know, a null hits Prophet's Eidetic Memory, Cauldron, and Fear of Missing Out from this deck. It's pretty potent. If this deck was really popular, and more so in this deck, I would maybe consider a main deck copy of a null. You have so much rummaging that I think you can kind of afford it. And also, you know, we just talked about the Dimir deck, and that deck has four Enduring Curiosity, which countering that for one mana would be a huge swing.
There's a lot of decks with
targets.
A lot of the time, hitting Cauldron or Profs with a null is going to be much better for you than killing it after they've, you know, tapped the Cauldron for value or drawn a card, obviously, off the memory.
Yep. I've played this deck a lot. I think it's really strong. I think maybe one of the best game ones in the format, and not that its post-board games are bad, but I would say typically they're worse for you than your game ones, but that might be more of a testament to how strong this deck is in game ones.
So for our next deck, we have Is It Prowess, which you might think that we just talked about, but this deck is also a high percentage deck. It's got 12.3% metagame share compared to Is It Cauldron's 14.9%. So these decks are pretty similar, sort of. I mean, are they? They both got four VV. They're both Is It. This one's even got a Soul Cauldron. What's the difference, really, between these two decks?
Honestly, there's a lot of differences, and it would almost... I'd say when I've been playing a lot of Prowess more than anything in the new format, and it's, I'd say, more of a control deck, or at least on the controlling half of a mid-range deck, whereas the Cauldron deck I would almost just consider an aggro deck, particularly in game one. I guess it has only a little bit more actual interaction. Usually like the full four Torch of Towers, three Flood Maws, usually a couple two mana ones like Roaring Furnace or a Braid, you'll see main decks. But then, you know, Stock Up offers a lot of unique selection, and Storm Chaser's Talent, you're kind of playing towards buying back some of these removal spells sometimes, or card draw spells. I'd say it can play a much longer game, typically. Though the Cauldron deck plays a long game in the fact that Prof's Eidetic Memory and Cauldron are really annoying permanents to answer, so sometimes that's not true.
This deck's more reactive, it looks like.
Yeah. Especially now that Steel Cutter is not in the format. It's pretty normal to see like one Wild Ride. I play one Wild Ride, I love it. It's just mostly for these slower decks. Once again, I boarded out faster matchups, but you know, not only on turn four is, if your opponent, particularly if they're tapped out, is going VV Wild Ride and spending four mana, usually just a very powerful play, plus the attack is worth a lot of damage. It just means that in the very long game, you just have this ability to, you know, like, you could even go VV Talent, Wild Ride my VV, and then make five mana and harmonize the talent, or harmonize the Wild Ride without tapping a creature on the Otter token, and that's more than like, that's what, 10 damage or something? I didn't add it up, but just out of nowhere.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and that's if you didn't have a lot more mana and were casting a bunch of ops and sleight of hands, too.
This deck also has a crash through, so I guess the dream here is to do that combo you just said and also have a crash through, trample.
Yeah, usually what happens is the game is even, you have access to even more mana than what I just described, and you just like bounce your opponent's blocker or things like that. Or, you know, your opponent just played the opportunity for this also comes up like right after your opponent played a sweeper. So there might not be blockers a lot of the time.
Okay, so you're not a huge advocate for that. It is pretty bad if you're not exactly killing your opponent with it, kind of. It's just
I like one Wild Ride because it's meant for these situations that I think mostly occur in long games, so I find that I end up with the Wild Ride in my hand in those matchups. And also, you know, you kind of need a VV for it to really feel good in this deck. So
you say this is more of a controlling deck, but I mean, it does have four Storm Chaser Talon and four Planisphere. Do you like those cards in the deck?
Yeah. In these straight blue-red decks, yeah. I mean, Storm Chaser Talon, I think, is just one of the best cards in Standard.
Of course.
It's a one-mana threat, and then also kind of has this Eternal Witness effect going on with it where you rebuy something. And also, occasionally, you level it to three, too, and it's a win con in that sense. I've actually been playing kind of my own version of Prowess that I think I hinted at wanting to start playing, but I've been enjoying it a lot, and that's a Teamer Prowess. I originally splashed for both Questing Druid and Elusive Otter and some sideboard cards, and I've completely cut Elusive Otter from my deck that card's pretty aggressively slanted. I think there could still be like just an aggro variant of it. I would recommend probably not playing 4 VV, maybe like 2 if you did that, because you want to keep your curve low if you're being a bit more aggressive, and you'll have plenty of other threats. But I love Questing Druid in this deck, and you know, the mana has changed. I already think that even the straight blue-red deck should probably be playing 2 to 4 starting towns. In Teemer, I'm playing 4. I've basically just cut things like Basic Mountain and Islands for, you know, like a Stomping Ground and 4 Breeding Pool and a blue-green Verge. So I have 10 green sources, which might sound light, but when you're talking about only Questing Druid, you almost always cast Seek the Beast first. So you've effectively seen like a similar number of cards as you would have by turn 5 by the time you would want to cast Questing Druid.
Yeah. You have a lot of selection. That makes sense. So basically you're just playing it instead of Planisphere, since the mana is almost free.
My current list actually still has 2 Planispheres, and then I guess I also mentioned the deck's kind of controlling. That might be biased towards the way I've built my deck, though I see these other lists have main deck consult the star charts, so it's kind of similar that I just have a lot more 2-for-1s in my deck. In these aggressive matchups, I'm boarding in basically every removal spell I have. You know, these things like Sideboard of Braids and Obliterating Bolt and Steaming Sauna end up in my deck. And yeah, I just think the green half of Questing Druid is very potent in a deck like this with all the cantrips. It ends up being, you know, it's permanent prowess effectively. And it even works off VV. The only card that doesn't give it a counter are other Questing Druid and sometimes sideboard cards, which, to be clear, are just various naturalized effects like Heritage Reclamation.
Sure.
Or sometimes Pick Your Poison. But the...
I mean, that's something blue doesn't really get. I guess you get a null, so you have a mix of it.
Yeah, it's just like a mix of those things. I have actually kind of enjoyed... I'm deciding between 1 Pick Your Poison or 1 Paw Patch Formation. I'm probably leaning Paw Patch Formation, and the reason I'm picking that one is because... to answer Meringue River Regent from those decks, mostly. I just want 1 card in my deck that does that.
That makes sense. Playing control decks against this deck, one of the things is after sideboard, your Meringue River Regent, just casting it can be really good when they're holding up Spell Pierce and Negate and don't really have removal for it.
Yeah, and also random one-ofs, not only do you have a lot of digging power to find them, but when they're instants of sorceries, you also can rebuy them with Storm Chaser's talent. So it's not weird, I think, to play pretty like unique one-ofs in this type of deck. Because you just have a lot of options once you draw it.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Yeah, I like this. It's interesting because the blue-red mana, like, isn't awesome, and so it doesn't even really get any worse to add green.
Yeah, honestly,
I mean, there's some cost, I guess, honest, but you know.
So shocklines obviously hurt you, but
right.
They're. You know, they can enter on tap when you want. They don't have to hurt you. And I guess all I would say is I'm pretty sold on playing with Questing Druid. If the meta somehow shifted to being a lot of mono red, and specifically both mono red being aggressive and them having Sunspine links, that would probably be like the thing that makes me not want to splash green. But if the format, I feel like, is kind of not that aggressive, and, you know, I mean, yes, your life total matters versus Dimir and Is It Cauldron. I think the rest of the decks we're going to talk about, it matters a lot less. There'll be some exceptions, of course. But it doesn't, they're not like burning you out. And if you're the Seek the Beast Questing Druid combo is just really powerful. You know, you end up 3 cards potentially for 1, because Questing Druid is just so potent that they have to answer it. And on top of that, because Questing Druid is so potent, like, you don't always have to hit 2 cards off Seek the Beast. You know, like, people have played Opera Love Song, which is basically Seek the Beast with a pump spell mode. But, you know, when you cast that card, sometimes you hit 2 lands. That's not a 2-for-1. Sometimes you hit 2 stock ups and you only get to cast 1 of them, things like that. You're not always casting on turn 2, so sometimes the game's really late. In general, when you play with these types of cards, you'd prefer to make other plays. But it's also nice that, you know, this is like a 21-land deck. And sometimes you just really need to hit your 3rd land drop, and you Seek the Beast and you hit your land drop, and you don't care about the other card even. And that's fine, because you still got like a 2-for-1 out of your what is close to a natural logic against Planisphere anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a really strong card. It's not very good with reactive cards, but most of your cards can be cast here if your opponent has literally anything in play.
So yeah, that's nice. I mean, so I understand what you mean by not very good with reactive cards is that you hit these reactive cards and you can't cast them. But,
yeah, like counter spells, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I have just cast Seek the Beast in response to my opponent's big spell and hit a Disdainful Stroke and countered their spell. And as the game goes long, you find these windows to kind of play around that a little bit more, I'd say.
Okay.
You know, if you do hit these reactive cards, you find opportunities to cast them. Also, it's it's draw three cards, so you're kind of inclined to want to play a lot of reactive spells when your deck has, if you know, if you're playing a Prowess Mirror, my deck just has more 2-for-1s than your deck. So,
right, so you're happy to interact, play cards that interact,
Like you're happy the game goes long.
Yeah, I guess the big thing about this card is the Seek the Beast is an instant. So you can play it, like you said, to try to hit your reactive spells when you find that you need them on your opponent's turn. And then if you hit something like a stock up, you could still go to your turn and play that.
Yeah, another interesting thing. So even before VV, it was not that weird in controlling mirrors to end up casting Seek the Beast on your own end step, because what would happen is your opponent casts, let's just say, Consult the Star Charts on your end step, and then usually you'd want to let them pick the cards, and then in your own end step you'd want to cast Seek the Beast just so it resolves. That wasn't that uncommon, but now with VV, sometimes, you know, you like on turn five you play VV, you play two non-creature spells, it's a 2/5, you can move to your own end step and add red mana and then cast Seek the Beast.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about the deck you've been playing in particular, what sort of matchups do you like about this deck? Like, are some of the big decks good matchups? Or is there some bad matchups?
I think playing with Torch the Tower and Sump Fodder, I've actually, in my flex slots, I have 2 Planisphere still in this deck, which I think versus the Dimir deck, it's weird to say they're Torch Fodder, but I think what ends up happening is they kill your hero, and then you don't really have time to like use the equip on it, and you're just totally happy if you're hitting a Enduring Curiosity, especially to torch it. In addition to that, you know, obviously the Storm Chaser's talent gives you some fodder, and Roaring Furnace can be something you sack. The Cauldron deck, I mean, to be honest, I'm not doing any dedicated testing, so I'm just running into these decks on Arena. I'm working on sideboard plans for that. I mean, I don't think it's terrible. It might be bad, you know, unfavored, but. You know, I think I want like 2 Anuls in that matchup, and I'm just trying to like map out my deck right now for how I want to approach that matchup. I think I'm approaching most matchups for the long game, particularly with Questing Druid in my deck, is what I would say.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess you must think the format is at least kind of mid-range to slow, for the most part, if you're taking a deck and essentially adding a color for like card advantage type cards.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not trying to hold your feet to the fire with matchups or anything. I also haven't played a ton this week, been pretty busy.
Yeah, I guess I'll add, you know, I'm testing a little bit of standard for this event in Phoenix in a few weeks, but I'm also, you know, looking at Modern and Edge of Eternity's draft for the Pro Tour, and I like my teamer deck a lot, and I enjoy playing matches with it on Arena, and also, you know, I finished top 200 last month with it. To get the qualifier weekend invite, and I just think my expectation for this event in Phoenix is that I'm probably just only gonna look at this deck to play for that event, to be honest, because I just think I don't have the time to just look at every standard deck and try them out, and I win with this deck a lot on Arena, and I'm not really gonna have any testing besides playing Arena, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. The reality is, for most people, even people as invested as you, most tournaments of basically Grand Prix level and below, the players aren't always going to have the perfect deck, going to have looked at every, tried every archetype and standard. A lot of the time you're going to sort of do something like you did, where you pick a deck that you thought was pretty good, and it's a new format, and a deck you like, and you've just sort of tweaked it.
Exactly.
You're going to play it. So a Pro Tour might be a little different. You kind of have more incentive to try harder and usually have more time.
Yeah, and I'd be on a team, so I can say, I want to play a bunch of my teamer deck versus Is It Cauldron? And if I just lose a bunch to a great player, then you know, that would make me worried. But the event I'm playing for is, you know, like a small Grand Prix level event, so I don't really expect my opponents to be that practiced either.
Right, right. So for those just listening, this deck is going to be on the YouTube graphic, and it'll be, I'm sure Jacob will post it on Patreon.
Yeah,
in fact,
I'll post one this week. I've just been tweaking some cards, but I'll just share like what list I have probably right after I'm done with this, and if I have any updates, I'll mention it.
Yeah, so the Patreon, you'll probably get the most up-to-date list, but
yeah,
either way, it's cool. So we can go back to our goldfish
Yep.
review here. The next deck we have is Esper Self Bounce. We're still, all four of these decks are at 10% of the meta. So, I mean, in a way, the meta's pretty solidified, at least the top ranks. So this looks like I'm looking at a Pixie deck, except, yep, of course, Pixie has had some cards that are banned. So I still see lots of one drops. We've got new cards. We've got Cosmogrand Zenith and some new removal spells. What's this deck's strategy and so forth?
Yeah, so obviously Hopeless Nightmare and This Town Ain't Big Enough were banned, which kind of really change how this deck plays out. A big upside for this deck is they printed Godless Shrine and Watery Grave. So I would say the mana from this deck is significantly better than it was before. And, you know, it's enabling Verges for itself too, which can be these painless lands. It's a great kind of combination you're going to see a lot in certain three-color decks moving forward. It can still have some aggressive starts with, you know, it has a bunch of one drops and Storm Chaser's Talent, bouncing it and replaying it and triggering prowess can add up really quick. It still has, you know, the same removal spells to bounce in Nowhere to Run, Momentum Breaker. It has added Spyglass Siren, which I probably is my vote for the worst card in this deck. But just the thing to bounce, and the map token is nice for Tragic Trajectory, which is a new removal spell it's kind of picked up. And it has four stock up, which makes sense to kind of, you know, you're kind of a mini combo deck, so assembling those. Also, you need the card flow for Storm Chaser's Talent and the new edition of Cosmogrand Zenith, which looks pretty impressive. Hopeless Nightmare was a great way of pressuring people before, and you lost that. And this is a very different way of pressuring people, but I kind of like that it's just playing this card that, you know, I think this deck's pretty great at double spelling between stock up and self bounce and Storm Chaser's Talent rebuys. You could even just keep playing a Pixie and a Sun Pearl Current on each other, I guess, to keep triggering this if you were really desperate. And you have a bunch of cheap flyers, so putting counters on all your guys in addition can be potent. What I usually see is this card on turn four, they'll play this in a one drop and make the 1/1s almost always, but then if they get to untap with it, they typically pick counters, and then they're almost heavily lethal at that point.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was reading over this card for our top 10 list, I sort of just figured it was another Monastery Mentor variant that wasn't very good, but it's got a lot of different things going for it.
Yeah.
Of course, it could be, you can trigger the ability off of creatures, which Monastery Mentor, it's funny, if that card had triggered off of creatures, you'd probably see it more because it's actually a card that works good in decks with other creatures. But of course, that has a limit of only being instants or sorceries, I believe.
Yeah.
Or as a non-creature for Mentor.
Definitely. Also, it's a 2/4. You know, we talked about all these Torch the Towers in the format. I think this card's
in mind.
That's
a huge deal.
With my kind of extra removal spells in Prowess, for example, I'm really keeping in mind cards that can answer this. It's also not the best to bounce with something with Into the Flood Maw, because if they are able to cast it and immediately cast another spell, they're already going to get immediate value, and then if you bounce it, they just have another spell in their hand. You have an interesting timing, more so in the window if they untap with this card, where if they cast like a stock up, you could respond by bouncing the Zenith, and if they don't have an instant, then they won't be able to trigger it that turn. But yeah, it's this deck. I have a couple friends that have been trying it, and they really like it. It makes sense to me. I think if you've played Old Pixie, this deck won't have the Hopeless Nightmare draws that it used to have. And also, obviously, the This Town plus Talent kind of loops were nice before, but I'd say for the most part, the gameplay is pretty similar. I know as Pixie kind of developed, this was before it basically fell off the map when Steelcutter was printed, but stock up playing four copies became really popular right after Pro Tour Aether Drift, and that made a lot of sense to me. And you can play a really controlling game. A recommendation I've heard is, you know, this deck's instant speed removal is like only Nowhere to Run, and people have wanted some cards that could maybe answer a big thing, so potentially Shoot the Sheriff is, you know, just what you're looking at there to include. One idea,
Get Lost maybe.
Yeah, Get Lost. Another idea I had was actually my friend Jarvis said maybe just he'd play Into the Flood Maw, but then that made me think, well, what if you played Bounce Off? I'd probably only play one Bounce Off at the most, but this is a deck that could really benefit from the ability to unsummon its own creatures, you know, mostly only in response to removal spells, but you could just unsummon your own thing and replay it and bounce a Nowhere to Run or whatever still. So
yeah, that could potentially be good with Cosmogrand Zenith too, right?
Yeah, also bouncing your own thing. Yeah, exactly. You can if there's any ever a deck that really wanted to be able to bounce its own thing, it's probably this one.
This list we're looking at on Goldfish at the moment has one Crowjin Relic. What do you think about that card?
Yeah, I was pretty impressed by it. I understand it's clunky. I guess I was thinking I would play more if I played this deck. But my friends
who played it
said, yeah, because also to be clear, like it enters or leaves, like when you bounce it, you draw a card. Stock Up is definitely like all reliable and doesn't require much going on and it's a lot cleaner.
Right.
My friend said maybe just keep the one relic main and sideboard a second copy or something for slower matchups, but that makes sense to me.
Yeah. You cut out for a bit, but I'm pretty sure you said keep one relic main and then maybe some more on the sideboard for slower matchups. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll move on to our next deck, which is this surprised me a little bit that it's the fifth most popular deck, but we've got Azorius Control at 6%. So Azorius Control looks similar here, looking at this list from last format. They lost Jace as their win condition. So this deck we're looking at looks like it's got a copy of Elspeth sort of as the win condition replacement.
Yeah, and then of course it has, you know, Beza, River Regent, and then the lands have Anchorage and Fountainport. So plenty of ways to win.
Yeah, especially against a normal deck. If you're playing against a deck that has lots of its own card advantage and removal, it might be a little trickier.
Yeah. I mean, Finical Star Cage also
mirrors, can make that sort of thing, mono white. Yeah, have you played? I assume you've probably played against this deck a lot. I don't know if you've played with it.
I have. I think I've joked with you that I play with it against Teamer Prowess, and the match always takes 3 games and goes to an hour, and I almost always win. I don't really think this deck's very good. I think something, I don't know, there's this competing space with River Regent and Consult the Star Charts and Stock Up. Seam Rip is a nice new addition. I don't know. I'm trying to think, you know, where the change in Pinnacle Star Cage is in other matchups, but I'll say playing Prowess, the fact that it's not hitting my Storm Chaser's talent is a huge deal in that matchup. Obviously, it's hitting the Otter tokens permanently, but I don't even care about bouncing this card or answering it really in any way. You know, they can have my Questing Druid and my Otter token, and I'll just have a Storm Chaser's talent rebuy a Stock Up or whatever.
Right. So I haven't played a ton of exactly blue-white control. I mean, it's definitely got a lot of things going for it. The white cards in Standard are really good right now. Seam Rip, Get Lost, various Wraths. The biggest challenge with blue-white, I think, is to make it not so clunky when I build it. So typically, I try to minimize the amount of 3-mana counters I have. And I think I would probably minimize my Meringue River Regents since I have Consult the Star Charts now. And I would lean on probably Elspeth as a win condition. It's a little tough. Yeah. Blue-white doesn't have a ton of great win conditions. I mean, Elspeth's pretty good.
I've probably lost Elspeth out of this deck more than any other card. And that's obviously coupled with the fact that they're interacting with me at various spots up the curve.
Right.
There's a lot of loyalty, and it's really good at defending itself.
Yeah. So I think that's where I would take the deck. I will be visiting it at some point, so if I feel like I have a good list, I'll post it on Patreon.
When you said you were playing Esper, now seems like a good time to talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So I'll bring up my deck. So I've been playing Esper Control. I liked the combo of the new combo of Singularity, Rupture, and River Churn Monument. But blue-black, I found the black cards for a control shell are really lacking. I had the Dragon Package and Scavenger Regent isn't as good as it was. There's more big creatures, and even some of the creature heavy decks, their creatures are going tall rather than wide. Basically, there's lots of way to pump up their creatures. So I wasn't happy with the black, so I wanted to use white, but of course Singularity Rupture is double black, so I'm essentially splashing it in blue white, which does, so blue white's mana is really bad. It's kind of the same as with your Teamer deck. Blue white's mana is really bad, and Esper's really good, so it's not a big cost to just play black.
Yeah, and I agree, it solves the big cost. It is, the blue white mana is worse than the blue red mana at a base.
Agreed.
So you get to play, you want to play Surveillance anyways, so you have a similar number of dual lands, I guess.
Yeah, and of course you have more lands, and you're in a deck like this, so your mana is in a way better for that. So yeah, I mean, and this fixes the issue with a needing a win con like against Prowess. It's no big deal that they have all of these Storm Chaser's talents in play has been my experience, because you just kill them in two turns with the Rupture plus the Monument.
That makes sense.
I've also added Soul Search. I wanted to try a discard spell that wasn't just Duress, since I had black, and because discard in general is good to set up this combo, more so than counter spells. And I've actually just been really happy with it. It's like kind of a good card. There's a lot of decks that play lots of...
from Ketra most decks, but never in other situations.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to look towards Ketra most decks as doing about doing good things, but there are a lot of good one mana cards that people play. So the one you get the 1/1 a lot more often than you think,
right?
And then you know, this is kind of a tap out style control deck, so the fact that you can just tap out and hit anything with it, I've just been impressed with it, and it powers out, you know, it lets you do the Rupture a lot easier in game one. So I've been happy with that. Consult the Star Charts, I've also been happy with. I just think it's a really good card.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
This deck gets Stock Up and Consult to sort of find the combo when you need it. So, yeah, been happy with it. It's like, again, I haven't played a ton of Magic over the last couple weeks. I've been pretty busy, but I've won a lot with this deck. So, cool. Could be variants.
I had an idea for this, mostly for Singularity Rupture, and that was to play Sultai. And I guess the big sell for Sultai is that your mana is really good. You've got Breeding Pool and a blue first green blue green Verge. In addition to the blue black mana is totally serviceable, and the cards you get from green, one of which would just be like playing Rakshasa's Bargain over Stock Up, which isn't a big deal, but does kind of play better instant speed. This might unlock, make like a card like Three Steps Ahead not feel as bad. But I was actually just thinking that disenchant effects would be kind of welcome. And even just main decking one or two Heritage Reclamations sounds kind of reasonable, just because like the card Soul Cauldron sounds extremely annoying for this deck. The fact that your combo involves milling half their library. This version that you have obviously has the Star Cage, which helps with that.
Right.
But that's just something I had in mind. Mostly just brought up by the fact that I think Sultai mana is very good.
It is, yeah. I built a Sultai deck with Rupture, and I haven't played with it yet, funny enough.
Yeah.
I've built a lot of decks and haven't played with them yet. And I had added, because I was trying to figure out, because in blue-black, one of the problems was it was too expensive to have a 6-mana Wrath as your first Wrath.
Yeah,
so green,
cover up, or you could play the Urgent. Were you trying the Urgent Necropsy?
No, I was using, I think it's called Ancient Cornucopia.
Oh, the ramp spell. Okay, the ramp.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 3-mana ramp rock that like gains you some life, and then since you play Rakshasa's Bargain, and then I had a couple copies of the Sultai Snake, the flash 3/3 that counters or kills enchantments.
Right.
With that Ancient Cornucopia, you can cast like a 3-color spell on your turn in game 3, and then on your opponent's turn, cast an instant speed 3-mana spell in game 3, so you can gain quite a bit of life with that card.
Gotcha. Do you know Urgent Necropsy?
It's kind of I think so. It's the one where you have to collect evidence, right?
Yeah. Kind of interesting with Rakshasa's Bargain, because that costs 6.
Yeah, that's true.
It can answer, you know, Cauldron Profs and a creature. That's pretty unique.
Yeah. So I'll keep that in mind. I'll need to try that deck. That sounds pretty interesting.
The card that I really wish hadn't rotated that I think would be perfect in that deck is like two copies of Terra Sunder.
I know. Yeah, I had the same thought. I was going to put that in. I was like, man, that rotates. It is a nice fit, especially since the exile. You're definitely
exactly.
Wishing you had more
enduring
things at exile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or any enduring creature.
Yeah. I'm going to be looking into that green. But yeah, this deck, and then the sideboard, you get like a Null, and Elspeth Smite's pretty nice, Voice of Victory. I sort of have this plan to against some decks where I just board out the combo. Decks that are either really fast and fragile to a big creature, you know, I'll board out the combo and bring in some Overlords and Smites and whatnot as win conditions. That's that deck.
Yeah,
I think that's a better deck than Blue-White Control, has been my experience so far. So definitely give that some experimentation if you're interested in control decks. Next, we have Gruul Aggro. 4.7%. What are we looking at here? What's this deck? Obviously, it's an aggro deck, but...
Yeah, it used to be called Gruul Mice, I'd say, but now that you can't play with Artfire Hero, they decided to call it Gruul Aggro, but it still has four Emberheart Challenger and four Manifold Mouse. And then I guess Soulstone Sanctuary is another potential mouse. This is pretty similar. It now main decks four Pawpatch Recruits because it kind of has to for one drops. It's still a four Innkeeper's Talent deck. It's pretty similar to what it was before. I see a list I clicked on first has Nova Hellkite. They're probably just trying that out. Screaming Nemesis, I think, is a pretty well-positioned card if there's a lot of red decks. And the combination of... like, Screaming Nemesis is actually really good friends with Innkeeper's Talent. I played four of each of these cards at Pro Tour Aether Drift. It's not that weird to want to just play your Innkeeper's Talent on turn two, so a haste creature is a really good way to, like, make up for the fact that maybe you didn't have a creature in play when you played your talent or they killed it. And also, the more toughness Screaming Nemesis has, kind of the more annoying it is for a red deck because they have to power through that toughness and you get more damage off of it.
Yeah, and it kind of eliminates blocking it as an option too if it keeps getting really big.
Exactly, yeah.
Have you tried Nova Hellkite in anything? Do you think it's any good?
No, not yet.
Yeah, me neither. I still want to build a kind of a dragon-based deck. I had the idea, I think I was talking to you about it, or maybe you had the idea, of playing the 2-mana Sarkhan.
Yep,
I've that reveals a dragon.
A lot of people.
Yeah, because you could play Nova Hellkite. There's the 4-mana dragon that destroys a land that I also think is quite good. And then you could play... people have sort of learned, and I've learned, that Twin Maw Stormbrood is a pretty decent removal spell. So
yeah,
that's something you could reveal.
Kind of an interesting note about Twin Maw Stormbrood, or I guess two interesting notes, is first of all, Lithomatic Barrage rotated, and that makes killing VV a little bit harder for red decks sometimes. So the roast is sometimes welcome against VV. Just, you know, usually you only have a one-turn window to do that, but when you have it, you need it. Also, all these aggro decks are playing Starting Town now, and even in my teamer deck, I have cast Twin Maw Stormbrood, the white half. And when you're playing a controlling kind of game, that's pretty good to have a 5-4 that gains 5 life. It's pretty unique,
civilizing
play.
If you're like in an aggro matchup type of thing.
Yeah, it probably comes up a little less in a deck like this, but I've had one Twin Maw on the sideboard of my Prowess deck, for example, and I play really long games, and it comes up a lot. Especially because when you roast something, it shuffles back into your deck, and then you find it later with stock up or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, gain 5 life in a game where you're trying to stabilize is no joke. 5-4 flyer, pretty decent.
Yeah.
So it's definitely better than roast. It's got some upsides.
Yeah, I'd say when you can cast it, it is certainly...
The type sometimes matters, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when this card was spoiled, there was a conversation about how almost every deck that actually ever played Roast had Delve or Snapcaster Mage or something like that really wanted it in the graveyard.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Fallen from Grace, this deck, huh? Do you think it's because they lost Monstrous Rage too, or is it mostly the mouse?
Mouse is the biggest deal. I mean, just the card Manifold Mouse is so much weaker in my eyes.
Right.
I've even thought about, you know, the combination of playing Emberheart Challenger and Innkeeper's Talent in a deck that doesn't have Manifold Mouse, and just, you know,
sure.
I didn't think that'd be terrible, but I guess Manifold Mouse is still making the cut here. You know, obviously it can target itself, but it's a little weird to me because you just also don't even have Monstrous Rage, you know? So it's like, what's a 2/1/1 or, you know, 2/1 power double strike creatures gonna really threaten to do? But, you know, Innkeeper's Talent obviously helps a lot, and they have Overprotect as well.
This deck's decently popular on ladder, and I've run into it a decent amount. It's much worse. I think maybe because the Manifold Mouse is so much less scary without the Heartfare Hero.
Yeah, and, you know, switching the Pawpatch Recruit is so much worse against, like, sweepers, and also it's, like, I find, even though this deck doesn't have anything else to kill with Fire Magic is so good against Pawpatch Recruit that I just find them in my deck. And also, that's not true what I said, right? Like, you can kick Fire Magic and kill both halves of a Fire Mouse, too, or a Manifold Mouse.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, the next deck is just red-white mice. I didn't realize this was really popular. I haven't played against it. I do love Mabel.
Yeah, I mean, this deck has more mice, so the Manifold Mouse is going to be a lot stronger. You even typically have the one-drop mouse of Flowerfoot Swordmaster, which, you know...
That strikes me as a pretty good card, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's flexible, and... I see this list even has Whisker Veil Forerunner. I mean, that's pretty interesting to me.
This
is
a deck
that I looked at a lot at the time of Gruul Mice. Certainly the biggest thing you lose out on is Innkeeper's Talent, which is like a recurring way to target your stuff. And also just really powerful card, in my opinion. But Mabel, you know, giving you the Crag Flame equipment is pretty powerful. I think in, you know, races, the fact that it's a Mice Lord is also going to be really powerful. But also, you know, in slower matchups, I think the fact that it's pumping all your mice probably won't matter. But the equipment will matter way more because it's a Haste, Vigilance, Trample granting equipment. It's only two to equip. Yeah,
this equip, is a deck. Equip also targets.
Yeah, exactly. This is a deck I've looked at playing before. We see they have Sheltered by Ghosts, which also targets. That's a card that, you know, is really high variance, but I respect it a lot more out of this deck than other decks, because if you draw a card off your Emberheart Challenger, then even if they untap and kill it, at least you weren't exactly two for one.
Yeah, and you're also, it's got, you know, they kind of have to kill all your creatures anyways. You're going to be pressuring them so quickly.
Yeah, I've seen this in deck with Shard Mage Rescue before too, which as the popularity of a four copies of Nowhere to Run deck rises, I'm not a big fan of either Sheltered by Ghosts or Nowhere to Run, but
right,
it makes sense in this deck, but I would heavily consider building your deck without it and giving it a try.
Yeah. So you think it's kind of an overrated card, huh?
Yeah, I would say it's overrated, really high variance. Yes, obviously. Even I have played with it and thought it was just the, you know, it's a card that can win a game that sometimes no other card can win. So it looks really powerful when it works. I found in particular, it's actually really bad against Into the Flood Maw because that's a one mana instant that if your opponent just has up, they're always going to kind of get you. But also, even if they're tapped out or they don't have it in their hand and you do resolve it, at any point in the game, they can pay one mana to just like bounce the Sheltered by Ghosts and give you a fish and maybe blow you out in combat, returning what they need, or just do it on your end step and win. If yeah. they don't want to spend, you know, it's also just a three mana answer to the creature that the Sheltered by Ghosts is on, even after it resolves. So
It's hard for me to say, honestly, because I have such a stupid bias of always playing slower and controlling decks that this card's always terrible against me. But
yeah. I mean, my bias is also like interesting because it's just like, at the Pro Tour, like, if you played this card in open decklist, it just seems kind of crazy to me, you know? Like, your opponent
yeah.
will play with a lot more respect for it in certain spots.
It does seem better as, like, maybe even just a sideboard a card out of a deck you wouldn't expect it from or something like that, but...
Yeah, there's certain matchups that we could... You know, there's a green landfall deck that's really popular that we'll get to later that,
Oh, that yeah, deck doesn't have very much like a good at all. Sideboard card against that deck.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so the next deck is we have Simic Midrange, which I've never played against this deck. What's going on here?
Yeah, so this deck has been creeping up in popularity pretty fast. I've been noticing it a lot more. It's a really funny deck to me. So just going through some of the cards, you got Llanowar's Paw Patrick Hue, Spyglass Siren, Bristly Bill, Floodpits Drowner, Genomorph Imago, Sentinel of the Nameless City, Enduring Curiosity, Ouroboroid, Neo Flood Maw, Bushwhack, and Subterranean Schooner. And a lot of the decks are just copy-pasting each other, so that's why I read it, because it's pretty unique. This is just kind of a green-blue beatdown deck interacting pretty much only with Into the Flood Maw, Bushwhack, and Floodpits Drowner. So not very efficient, or not really efficient answers, but not permanent ones. It has sideboard, you know, Unable to Scream and Repulsive Mutation. And I think this deck is kind of showcasing what good mana can do, because blue-green was one of those color combos we touched on in the previous episode, that, you know, it's just like, it has the Verge, the Breeding Pool, the Botanical Sanctum. You know, this deck is fitting in some Vine Stalks and Soulstone Sanctuaries. It's just really good mana.
Especially for an aggressive deck.
It's a Llanowar Elf deck.
It's really good mana. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got some nice flexibility with, you know, I see these lists usually have 23 lands plus 3 Bushwhack plus all this Explore. So, and it has creature lands and it has landfall triggers. So I think it has a lot to do with its mana, but also can kind of play on, you can't play on no lands, but you know, if it only has access to 4 mana the whole game, it's going to be really happy. But if it has access to 6 mana, it's probably not going to be unhappy either. Yeah, it's just a beatdown deck. There's Ouroboroid is obviously a card that can really kind of go over the top of things if they don't have removal. Also, if they don't have removal right away, and you know, this deck has a ton of creatures that can at least kind of pump your whole team. Even if they have an answer next turn.
Yeah, it's kind of like Curiosity in a way, isn't it? Where it's just this 4-drop snowball card that if you have a lot of creatures in play, your opponent's going to have a hard time winning. So if you can ramp your creatures out and go wide, seems pretty good.
So yeah, I imagine if I played this deck, I'd probably change a lot of cards, but I think fundamentally the like idea of playing a blue-green beatdown deck makes a lot of sense to me. It's just... it has really cheap and efficient cards, and you kind of aren't maybe going to be able to play as much of a long game as you'd like when you play with Into the Flood Maw and Floodpits Drowner, but those cards are really good at getting in damage when you need damage.
Yeah, This deck looks kind of scary, actually.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a ton of good, like, green-based aggro decks, but there's definitely some good green cards out there. So, with the mana being such that green-blue is one of the best aggressive color mana bases, definitely one to keep an eye out for.
Yeah. Green-blue is, I guess, of all the four-color green combos, has the best mana. So, this kind of makes sense if you're looking to play a green aggro deck that you're kind of capitalizing on just having amazing mana.
Yeah. The next one, we could probably kind of skip over here. It's mono red. Yeah. I imagine it's pretty similar to, you know, like the Gruul shell, but without green cards.
Yeah, and you've got to play some even worse one drops than Paw Patch Recruit. But for the most part, very similar.
Yeah. I haven't played against mono red, I don't think.
Wanted to play mono red right now, I would feel like the really big selling point to me would be Sunspine Lynx, because there's a lot of three color decks and the Shocklands are painful. And if I did that, I would probably be the type of more big red deck that would want to play four Sunspine Lynx in the main deck and 24 lands or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe you can get some Nova Hellkites in there too. That sounds kind of like a nice deck.
Yeah, kind of like a big burn thing. Yeah, that idea sounds appealing to me. Maybe not even the mouse package at all, to be honest.
Yeah. Let's see. The next deck has Esper Midrange. I'm assuming this is just blue-black midrange with people splashing around.
Yeah, so kind of in the same thing you said, you know, they got Godless Shrine and some Verges and Starting Town anyways. So yes, it's blue-black splashing for Voice of Victory, Get Lost and No More Lies, some sideboard cards. Makes sense. Maybe not worth it, but Voice of Victory, in my mind, is a pretty strong card. We talked about maybe the removal spells being a lot worse, so Get Lost also. And Seam Rip, I guess, is also in this deck. You know, gives you perhaps more flexibility. Not quite as much of a game changer, I guess, as, you know, I just justified Questing Druid, but Questing Druid is doing something that I think there isn't a card in blue-red that can do. Whereas this is just like creatures in removal that are better than maybe what you think the creatures in removal and just blue-black are.
Yeah, it's interesting. This list only has two Voice of Victories, which to me, that would be the biggest pull.
Me too, yeah.
Maybe they found that four was too unreliable with the mana base, but I would think it would work fine. And, you know, Voice of Victory is kind of good with Kaito because you can bounce the token when it attacks and then you get to keep your guy into play. It's good with Curiosity because it attacks those three bodies. And then it's also good with both of those cards because it shuts off your opponent's interaction once you get to your turn.
Yeah, it's also, this is kind of the same point, but it's good with those cards because when you play it on turn two into your opponent's open removal, they can't kill it. So it's kind of sticky in that regard. It's similar to a creature of Flash almost.
Yeah, and it slows them down a bit so you can get, because what blue-black midrange is really trying to do is get enough permanents on the board that your opponent can't answer them all before you play Curiosity or Kaito, and then just kind of snowball. So something interesting to try, maybe.
Yep.
And then most of these other decks against pretty low percentage, so I'm going to leave it up to you which ones you feel like you want to talk about.
I want to talk about Sephiroth decks. So that's the next one here, which is this black-white aristocrats deck, because I've seen a lot of variation on this deck. The list I see here is what I've seen a lot of, which has Raise the Past, kind of what you'd expect, Voice of Victory. The
just filled with creatures. A lot. Creatures and creatures and creatures,
What I've been more impressed with is moving away from Raise the Past and so much of this aristocrat-style stuff. The cards I really like are Forsaken Miner, Infestation Sage, Umbralcrawler Zealot, Voice of Victory, and Sephiroth. And then the so obviously I only listed one white card there in Voice of Victory, but I think the mana is really good in black white. It's the same as I guess green blue is before, and your Verge is even black first, which makes playing, you know, these black one drops pretty strong, and maybe just playing, you know, good removal and stuff like that. There's also the Warp guy, sorry, I'm trying to find his name. He costs black for a 2/2 haste with warp for a black and pay 2 life, and you can warp it from your graveyard. That's a thing you can just sack and recur over and over again. I guess what I'm mentioning, one card I omitted from that list to be clear is just like the Blood Artist, the 2-mana 1/1 Vengeful Blood Witch. You know, I like that all the cards I listed I think are pretty good at attacking without synergy, and I still think you're going to have enough fodder for Sephiroth. And, you know, the Umbralcrawler Zealot is just a 2-mana 3/2 anyways. Forsaken Miner, you know, can come back not only with removal, but Sephiroth does target. So, and it does work in such a way that, you know, if you untapped, for example, if you went Miner into Umbrocrawler Zealot into Sephiroth, and then on turn four, you had four black mana, you can just sack and return the Forsaken Miner for each of your black mana. You sack it, and you target them with Sephiroth, and it's in your graveyard, and you're committing a crime, so you can pay a black to return it.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
And it's 2/2 instead of a 1/1. Infestation Sage, I like among, you know, there's three different 1-mana 1/1s that die and make a 1/1, but Infestation Sage making a flyer seems the most useful to me because you're kind of trying to win with chip damage.
This deck looks pretty weak to Pinnacle Stargate, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, this deck could play, I guess Gitlost doesn't answer that, so we'd have to play a different kind of white card to answer that. I see in the sideboard they have it. I don't know if you can main deck anything. The mono blacklist.
Yeah, they've got some disenchants in the sideboard, but those are hard to main deck.
Yeah, you could also play Tragic Trajectory. A sideboard card from your Esper deck that came to mind was that white-black discard spell, because making a 1-1 in this deck would actually be worth a lot.
Yeah.
I assume this deck, if you cast that card and your opponent had a 1-mana card in their hand, you'd almost always take it.
Probably. Yeah. I like that it hits three steps ahead. That's my favorite part of that card. And you get
that's
1-1.
Funny. Yeah.
But that's kind of a silly thing to like about it, but I kind of hate three steps ahead, so it's
Smuggler's Surprise, too, which...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get that out of here.
That's a deck Storm I play Chaser's against Talent. A lot.
There's a lot of one drops that are.
Well, Storm Chaser's Talent is usually in play.
Hey, now don't ruin my dreams.
It's good right after they resolve stock up and get a talent though.
Yeah. There you go. So I have another idea for a black white deck that I've sort of been toying around with, but I haven't really played much with.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a hybrid between a deck that plays cards like this one does and mono white, like the controlling type of deck. So my thought was maybe you play something like Infestation Sage or Nesting Bot. Maybe Infestation Sage since you got the black on the Bleachbone Verge.
Yeah.
And then you would play Voice of Victory. You would probably play the Carrot Cake. And maybe some number of the sack guy, the Umbrocrawler Zealots. And then at your three-drop slot, you could play Sephiroth's Enduring Innocences and even the Caretaker's Talent. And then you could play more removal. You'd have to play more removal. And then at the top, you could play Elspeth.
Oh, yeah,
and
so Elspeth you'd be, would be great in this type of deck. Yeah.
Yeah, so you could be like an aggressive slanted deck, and then after sideboard, you could like bring in wraths and removals and things and board out some of your creatures. And so in some matchups, you'd have the benefit of the mono white control deck, but then you'd also in other matchups, you'd be able to pressure them. And Sephiroth sounds pretty good and with a lot of those cards too. So
yeah, it makes sense.
Building, you know, haven't actually played much, but I've been building different lists. Black white has a lot of different cards it could play, so it's hard to narrow it down. Like what removal is good and whatnot, but
yeah, another two drop I've faced every now and then is Sinkhole Surveyor, which is also a 2-mana 1/3 that kind of gives you some fodder.
Oh yeah, when it attacks, yeah. So it kind of works well with Innocence and Caretaker's Talent. Also, well, that's even another card I need to fit into my 60 card deck. So thanks for that. But yeah, I really like the mana, and then Fountain Port could be good in that deck too. Obviously, still, so yeah. Okay. So that's all the big decks on Goldfish. So that's going to be it for this episode. Again, we're just doing an overview. Stay tuned on Patreon for lots of standard brews, and maybe even since I'm going to play in an RCQ this weekend and Jacob's going to play in a bigger tournament than that, we'll both post what lists we're going to play so you guys get an idea of in case you have any tournaments this weekend. That's going to be it for this one. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Okay. Something about some Infinity Stones or something.
Yeah. I was curious. Figured we could have a conversation about how you feel about Marvel sets because they're pretty controversial and...
Hate them.
You hate them. All right. So for those that don't know, you know, they spoiled this Soul Stone card in the Spider-Man set. And I don't know if they've outright said it yet, but the little snippet of the video spoiling it kind of implied that this is the only stone in the Spider-Man set and kind of... Generally, with Universes Beyond, my expectation is that they plan on releasing 5 more Marvel sets at a minimum, each that'll have a different stone. I think the Soulstone card itself is super cool. That's not really what I want to talk about. It seems kind of flavorful. It's pretty simple flavor, but still. But
yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I have a friend who loves Marvel and used to play Magic, and he thought this whole stone was super flavorful, and he likes it.
So. Yeah, and I hear stuff like that all the time. I used to work in a game store, and so many people would come in, and this was in the era of stuff I didn't give a crap about, where it's just like they'd be like, "Oh, I love Doctor Who," or "I love Assassin's Creed," and I'd be like, "Wow, like this is actually working, like in front of my eyes that somebody's about to buy a commander deck."
As it turns out, yeah,
because they like the IP and they don't even play Magic.
Yeah, I saw it with Final Fantasy, and I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, Final Fantasy, the best-selling set of all time. So the Universe Beyond thing seems to be working, and I don't know. It makes me more optimistic when they tell me they're making a Marvel set and they can get 6 sets out of it compared to it just being a one-off thing, because that's just like more Magic sets, I guess.
Yeah. Marvel. I don't think it fits well with Magic, and I don't like it, but I'll get over it. There's sets that have come out that I didn't like the flavor of or in normal Magic too.
Well, yeah, and then the kind of Universes Within thing they're going to have to do for it, where the digital cards will be different, is both.
Oh, that's the worst.
Pretty upsetting. Yeah, it's also going to be really funny because all these cards are spider heroes, and they all care about heroes, villains, and spiders. So it's going to be so funny to just see this card. It's just like, it's Aunt May, and Aunt May says, like, whenever a creature enters, you gain a life, and if it was a spider, put a +1/+1 counter on it. And it's just, this is just be some card that's just like old spider
Grandma lady. Spider or like, something. Yeah. it's the worst part. I forgot about that, man. Soulstone thing, those seem kind of cool. I mean, they could do like 2 a set or something, right? So maybe there's not that many sets coming. I don't know.
Yeah. And then I've just been looking at, you know, some of these Spider-Man cards, and some of them look like they could be pretty nice in Standard, at least. But there's so many 2-mana legends that are in that category, and, you know, Slowker, I guess,
be weird.
Was in that category, like, before, but they had, you know, a lot of looting and the channel lands. Like, I don't think you can just put, like, a curve of 4 of legends without stuff like Rona and Rafine and Inti kind of buying you out. Because those decks, even with those cards, you would play those decks and you'd be like, oh my god, like, my hand's all the same legendary creature. I'm just going to lose. Like,
yeah. It's funny, that dynamic is interesting for deck building, I think, but it plays pretty poorly. Because sometimes in Magic, you just draw multiple of the same, you know, like, you just draw all 3 copies of your same 2-drop, and if they're all legendary, it's makes gameplay so much worse.
Yeah, it also plays into a big pet peeve of mine is looking at other people's decks. I mean, people, they hate not playing 4 of a card. Like, it, they just won't play it. Like,
Japanese players,
I just see this
bro.
All the time. You know, like, so this is an example that I thought of today, where I thought maybe Hylia Guided by Light could actually be kind of good in Boros Energy, because, you know, you've got Guide of Soulless Flage already gaining life. It gains life for Ocelot Pride. You've got a bunch of tokens, things like that. But, you know, when I thought, would I really play this in Boros Energy? And it's like, I'd try one. But, like, I just feel like if anybody ever tries one, they're going to really like it and play more copies, and then it's going to be bad.
It's going to get bad pretty quick. Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just like the contextual, like, spots for it aren't going to come up often enough because they won't draw it very much, and then they're just going to cut it for another card they like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shame on them.